The sermon title, which started back in the beginning of June, burned out. It's about restoring breathing space in our life. And this morning, this message really kind of ties in with the one I gave last week, which was a special message for the Angora fire victims and the church at large. It is the last one I'm going to do in this series. And it's twofold, because we've been looking at stress, and we've been looking at overload, and we've been looking at how we literally get ourselves into lifestyles that really run us. And we talked about, you know, where Jesus says, you know, where King David writes, you know, he makes me to lie down in green pastures, where Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden. We've been looking at the idea and the concept of rest from God's perspective for 4 weeks. Today, as we close, I want to transition that a little bit and into really remembering what matters the most in life. So in other words, if we really have to look back at our lives and say, you know, what am I doing that's putting me in this harried pace and this overload? The answer to that question is always the same, is we try to do too much. That's the answer to that question, by the way. Why are we always trying to do so much? And why is it we forget what matters most? That's what the message is about today. But in forgetting what matters most and hearing it again today, what you're going to hear is really what we're talking about with the Angora fire victims, or what we talk about in anything that we do at Sierra Community Church. Because these three truths that we're going to share with you this morning really sum it all up on the way we're supposed to live. These three things I want to teach you this morning are the only things in life, according to the Bible, that actually will outlast you. You know that? They're the only things that will actually outlast your life. A good friend, former teaching pastor here at Sierra, Bill Muir, for anybody that remembers, this is a fun little thing. How many of you remember Bill Muir? Not too bad. This guy could teach. And we had him for 5 years here, and he was my mentor, along with Renee, another guy that could really teach. Bill and I were sitting talking here in town the other day, and he's just one of these guys. He's an idea guy. He's brilliant. And he has this great slogan that he shared with me about the Christian life the other day. And you might want to write this down in your notes. He said, Dan, life is God's story to write. It's our story to live rightly. I looked at him. I said, Bill, that's brilliant. You know, because every teaching in the Bible, as it relates to application, how we should live then, really is about that part of the story where we try to live rightly. Now, know this. God's written the story for you that you're forgiven. You receive that free gift. That's part of God's story to write in your life. But the other part of God's story to write is what's going to happen in my life. There's so much that I really don't control. I run around thinking I do control it, but we don't control it. And so this whole series has really been about, you know, it's God's story to write. It's our story to live rightly. And so today I want to teach you three things about living rightly. Paul, I showed the scripture verse last week, says that everything that God gives us in his word is to help us to make right choices. That's why we preach on Sunday from the word of God. Not from Dan's life experience, but from God's word. When people come up to me and say, boy, great job today. I say, no, it wasn't me. It was God's material. I'm plagiarizing. And so what I want to tell you this morning, these are not new truths. In fact, everything I'm going to talk to you about, you already know. You already know this. These are a reminder. And your notes will be a valuable asset to you if you put them on your refrigerator and look at it with some intent once a week and ask yourself, am I doing these three things that are going to outlast me? Am I really doing these three things, or am I making short-sighted choices? Now, know this. John's wife, Beth, Pastor John's wife, Beth, and I were just talking before I came in here, and we were talking about the message, and she's a very wise woman, and I really listened to her, and she used a phrase with me. She says, I was talking about how somebody after the 9 o'clock service says, this is so hard. And I said, yeah. That's why I'm preaching on it. It's not easy. That's why I spent 5 weeks on this. And Beth said to me as we were recounting that story, she says, Dan, this requires a paradigm shift in how one sees the world. And all I want to tell you is, it's not easy what I'm going to teach you here. You're going to go, oh yeah, I know that. But to do it will take a completely different worldview than the one that you've embraced and lived for most of the days of your life, if you're an adult, especially you men that are out working hard. God's writing the story, and this is what he says. Number one, the best use of life is love. Paul, in 1 Corinthians, gets to the 13th chapter, and it's called the love chapter. And in the very first verse, which is really the end of chapter 13, of verse 14, he said, let love be your highest goal. And I want you to circle that phrase, highest goal. He doesn't say, let love be one of the things that you value in life. Put it in your top 10. Paul says, make love number one in your life. And back in the love chapter, this is the paraphrase of this verse, meaning it wasn't a translation, but another man's writing it. No matter what I say, what I believe, what I do, Paul says, I'm bankrupt without love. Actually, the passage there says, you know, if I have all knowledge, if I can do this, I can do that. You can have everything in life. He says, but if you don't have love, gong, you're just a clanging gong. That's it. Big deal. I shared a couple weeks back the story of the chairman of AT&T. Back in its heyday, he had 1 million employees under him as the CEO. He said that I had heads of state, heads of corporations in daily contact with him. He said, my life was filled with the importance of running one of the largest corporations in the world and having power and influence in everyone's life. And then I got sick. And he says, and I ended up in a long stay in the hospital where pieces of my body were being taken from me. He goes, it was a very, very traumatic and trying time in his life. The time in his life when he needed support the most. And this man, who talked to heads of state, who had 1 million people working for him, told us, in his own words, that the only person he ever saw the entire time he was in the hospital was his own wife. And truly, even more tragic, he never received a phone call other than from his own wife the whole time he was in the hospital. He said, I realized that my wallet was full and my life was empty. I was bankrupt without love. And it dawned on me, when you live a life where people are tools, tools only show up to work. They don't show up to your life. One day, a guy comes to Jesus. And he basically says, I need the cliff notes on the Bible. Summarize the Bible for me, Jesus. And Jesus says, here it is. Love God with all your heart and love other people. He actually said, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. But what Jesus was saying in that, the great commandment of human existence, whether you believe in him or not, that's the great commandment of human existence, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, even if you don't know him. And to love your neighbor as yourself. He summed up the whole Bible there. Jesus is saying the point of life is relationships. Write that down. The point of life is relationships. Jesus doesn't say that relationships are a part of your life. He doesn't say that loving relationships are an important part of your life. He says loving relationships are your life. Paradigm shift. Now I want to share something that has run through my mind many times over the years when I think about, am I a loving man or not? Jesus says, if you love only those who love you, what reward is there for that? Oftentimes I say, yeah, I'm pretty good at loving those I love. I'm pretty good at inviting the people to my house that I like. By the way, Randy, I haven't had you at my house for a long time, have I? I'll work on that, buddy. Here's the point. When we get overloaded, what do we normally do? Where do we cut back? I think a normal human response when we get overloaded is that people begin to get cut out of the loop. And you know how many of us have cut our families out when we know they're the ones we love the most. So if we're cutting out the ones we love the most, our time is too short for them. What's it like for those that are on the outside of that bubble? Let me share something you might want to write in your notes on the back page too. Not everything that's urgent in your life is important in your life. It took me years to understand this. You know, this is why we did the four parts leading up to this, because it was other people's urgency that pushed me to do things that weren't as important because I wanted to please them or seek their approval, or I couldn't let somebody else down. So that's why we talk about those other parts, and you might want to go back and listen to them. But not everything that's urgent is important. Urgent always seems to get our attention, but it's not always the most important. That's when we talk about choosing better over good. And I'm going to ask you a question. I don't expect an answer, a show of hands at this point, but just ask this in your own mind right now. How many of you would like to make a positive influence on the world that outlasts you? How many of us want to be thought of, when I leave this planet, at least it would be nice to know that I did something with my life that outlasts me, that somebody would remember, even if they don't remember me by name, that the acts of kindness or the caring or the job performance or the teaching or the coaching or whatever I was involved in outlasted me a little bit. That there was some sort of shadow, that remnant that remained, a residue of my life that was remained in the lives of others that I was able to touch. I think we would all raise our hands and say, yeah, of course. Of course I want my life. Well, I want to tell you something. God's not only told us how to do that, He showed us how to do that. How to leave a lasting legacy. It's simply to fill our lives with love. We think it's our achievements. Because we live in a culture that evaluates us and asks us on a constant basis, what do you do? You know, how often are you in a conversation with someone and 20 minutes into the conversation, well, by the way, what do you do for a living? I have to work hard, by the way, when I'm having conversations with you guests that are visiting, and I usually say, hey, where are you from? You know? And the next question that always wants to come out of my mouth, what do you do? And that's okay, but it's all part of this cultural thing that says our value is wrapped up in what we do. And so we listen to that our whole life, and we think it's our achievements that people are going to remember. Now, I've done a lot of funerals over my life. Lots. And I got to tell you something. Here's what I've learned from doing funerals. I hate to tell you this. Nobody remembers what you did. I would bet the most I ever hear about someone's career in a funeral is 20 seconds. It's a mention. It's a passing line. Their whole life devoted to it. And you get 20 seconds. You know what they remember? The relationship. That's what they talk about. I've also been around a lot of deathbeds. And you know what people surround their life with when it's ending? I can tell you this. It's not their achievements. It's not their diplomas. It's not a picture of their house. It's not a picture of their car. They don't display their cool collections that they have in their room. Or have a little board up talking about, these are all the things I got done at work. These are the programs that I helped develop. Those are all important things. But they're not what matters most. People surround themselves when their life is ending with people. And here's the point. Eventually, you, if you haven't figured it out yet, will figure it out in your final seconds. That's what matters most, our relationships. And I'm not chastising you here today, okay? I'm as like you. I mean, I get running, all right? And I forget. Yeah, people matter. My question is, why not figure it out sooner than when you're dying and all the nice things are finally being said that could be said every day of our life? Why wait till you're on your deathbed? See, according to Matthew 25, Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is speaking in there. He says, when you get to heaven, God is not going to ask you, so tell me about that 40-year career. What'd you get accomplished? It's not in there. You know what he asks? How did you treat other people while you were here on earth? That's what God's going to ask us. I thought about this. You know, I wake up so far every morning. And oftentimes, one of two things happens to me, and this is probably true of you too. You're coming out of that groggy state, right? And you're waking up. And one of two things happens. One, I'll start thinking about my day and what I got to do. Actually, I take that back. I try to figure out what day it is. Today I woke up in a fright. Sunday! But then once I figure out what day it is, I start either thinking about what I got to do. Oftentimes I stop myself and it may sound a little bit insincere because my brain's just really foggy when I'm waking up, but it's true. I go, Lord, I don't mean this to be lip service, but boy, I love you. Thanks for loving me. I want to do right by you today in my life, okay? Well, listen to this. I thought about that. I go, you know, that prayer is good, but it's not good enough. Here's a new one. God, whether I get anything else done today, and I may not get anything else done, that's acknowledging, you know what? You don't always get the day you think you're going to get. But I do want to make sure today I spend time loving you and loving other people, because that's what matters most. That's the prayer. Problem is, we get busy and we forget what we intuitively know really matters, what our deathbed teaches us. And the second truth, besides the best use of life is love, the best expression of love is time. Now, I'm going to tell you a true story here. This is a cool story. This is a mother telling a story, relaying a story about her grown son and his two daughters. Listen to this. My son has two daughters. One who's 5, and one who's in the terrible twos, and believe me, they are the terrible twos. For several years now, my son has taken the oldest girl out for a date time, but he has never taken the 2-year-old out until recently. On their first date alone, the younger one, he took her out to breakfast at a local restaurant. They had just gotten pancakes, and my son decided it would be a good time to tell her how much he loved her. Jenny, he said, I want you to know how much I love you, sweetie, and how special you are to mommy and me. Do you know that we prayed for you when you were not even born? And now that you're here with us and growing up, we couldn't be more proud and happy. He said, I stopped talking and I reached for my fork after sharing that. And he says, my little daughter reached out this tiny little hand and placed it on my hand as I was grabbing the fork to cut the pancake. And she looked up into my eyes and said, longer, Daddy, longer. So he sits the fork down and he begins to tell her more nice things. He says, 2, 3, 4 times. She reached out and put her hand on his hand as he was reaching for the fork finally. Longer, Daddy, longer. I said, a few days later, she ran up to her mom and said, Mommy, Mommy, I'm such a special daughter. Daddy told me. Time. Now, this one's going to be a little painful. In a study, dads were asked to estimate what time they spent with each of their kids every day. I know some of you guys are thinking, hey, wait a minute, Father's Day was 3 weeks ago. Each guy, the average estimate of these guys that was polled, was 15 to 20 minutes per child. They recorded these guys' lives for several days to find out how much actual time they spent with their kids. It was shocking. The dads even said, oh my gosh, no idea. The actual average amount of time spent with these dads with their kids was 37 seconds per day, divided into 2.7 daily encounters, meaning 3 different times a day their father would check in with their child for 10 seconds face to face. That was the average. John the Apostle says, we must show love through actions. Let me tell you, the greatest action you will ever display is time. Why? Because it is the most valuable commodity we possess. Because once given away, it doesn't come back. There's only a certain amount of it. That's why I think it's the greatest gift you can give somebody. You know, I have struggled with intimacy my whole life as far as conversation. I really get lost in crowds. You know, I'm okay one-on-one with people and just talking. But, you know, people are bopping around like here on Sunday afterwards. I don't even remember who I talked to. You know, I'll say to someone, what service did I, who did I, you know, it just all kind of blends. That's all part of my intimacy issue, as it were. I break down. I tell you that my saving grace is I made a choice in life as a pastor to make time for people. I can't tell you how many times when the girls call me and say, on Monday through Thursday, such and such dropped by, they need a couple minutes of your time. Every time, there's a split second in me where I go, oh, I don't have time for this. I've got this to do right now. And that little voice says, people matter. Okay, yeah, send them on up. Now, that's Monday through Thursday. Friday, Saturday when I'm preaching, hit the road, Jack. This sermon takes precedent over everything. But all I'm saying is what Pastor Dave Beatty, who's gone to his reward, used to say to me. He goes, Dan, 80% of ministry is showing up. You can't be of any impact in a person's life unless you're there. Being there, being present, being available to people. That's why Paul says, you know, live a life filled with love. And then he says, follow Jesus' example, who gave himself as a sacrifice. And, you know, his sacrifice obviously was his life for us. That's how we sacrifice, is by giving our time. Problem is, we don't have time to give because it's being robbed by work schedules that we somehow just accept that go above and beyond what's humane. activities that we choose that take us away from others. Too much church involvement. Hobbies. TV is a huge robber of relationships. My own sons will tell you. Now, they'll tell you. They say this. I'm not beating my chest here. They respect their dad because you know what? Cats in the Cradle. Remember that song? You know, when you're coming home, Dad? When I came home, the baseball gloves went on, the soccer ball came out. I mean, I said, thank you for boys, Lord. You know, we spent a lot of time together playing. And so I have a pretty good relationship with both my guys. But even so, even though I worked hard at making time for my sons growing up, coming out of the, you know, making time for everybody lifestyle, I'd sit in front of that TV. You know, my wife would cook that meal for me, all that blood would rush to my tummy, and I'd just start drooling, you know. And my kids, no joke, my kids would look at me, and they'd want to talk to me. And my wife is the one who told me this years ago, and it just didn't penetrate. She goes, you talk to your sons when they're ready to talk. He goes, parents that try to talk to their kids on their terms never get the conversations they want, but your kids will always talk to you, she said. You just have to be ready, willing, and available to hear them when they're talking. And so it would always be, we're out playing catch and we're saying a few things, but we're just playing fantasy out there, you know? When the real stuff would hit the table is when I was sitting there and the TV's on, they'd go, hey, Dad, da-da-da-da-da-da. And they would tell you that they used to, this is no joke with me, this is the funny running story in our life, it still exists. Dad, 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 and here's the funny thing, Dad is right here. And they're right here, Dad, 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 Dad! And I'd finally snap up and look at them. You know, that was, what was going on there? Well, vegetarian TV was robbing me of a relationship. I went into checkout mode. Computers do that. My wife says to me, are you on the internet again? Yes. I'm working, dear. Okay, what's the common denominator of all those things that I mentioned? Hobbies, church involvement, TV, computers, work, activities. Time! They rob us. Here's the irony. A friend shared with me. We sit and watch a program called on TV called Friends. Well, we're not making any. You know, we live vicariously through the six characters on Friends. Oh, that'd be great to have friends like that. You know. Paradigm shift. Different way of seeing the world. Here's the problem. Especially what I've been teaching for 4 weeks prior to this. Where are we going to get the time? Between fatigue and obligation. Well, it takes a conscious, hard-fought effort to build some room for relationships. You know, we've laughed over and over about that thing about parking in the back of the parking lot. That little object lesson has done more to make me realize that I'm not going to let life run me. Because I've pulled into many parking lots since that sermon 5 weeks ago, and I go, parking in the back. I know I'm in a hurry. Parking in the back. You know? Not going to let life run me. I'm going to slow down. And that's just the beginning of it, because we have to start weaning ourselves from the things that rob us from what matters most, relationships. And where relationships are met is in the time we spend with them. You have to make love number one. For love to be number one, God and others have to be involved. Otherwise, you are just loving yourself. Which leads us to number three, the last point. There we go. The best time to love is today. Paul says, whenever you have the opportunity, we should do good to everyone. Ephesians 5, he says, use every chance for doing good. Listen to this story, classic story. Billy Crystal, the actor. His daughter was turning 11. He was in New York filming a movie. He calls her to apologize because of his movie work schedule, and it was missing her birthday that he'd be sending her a package soon. Later that day, Lindsay opened the door on her 11th birthday, and here was a 6-foot-high carton standing in front of her. She tears into the carton. Oh, Daddy, you sent me a big present. It was Dad inside the box. Yeah. Crystal said, Billy said, she hugged me for 5 minutes. It was unbelievable. He went on to say, you know, I have missed 25 birthdays of my dad because he died when I was 15 of a heart attack. Why is now the best time to express love? Listen to this true story. Many of you will remember George McGovern. He ran against Richard Nixon in the 72 presidential election. Got hammered. But and then we got hammered. And then he wrote a book 10 years ago, in 1997, about his daughter, Terry. The title of the book was Terry, My Daughter's Life and Death Struggle with Alcoholism. In 1994, 3 years before he wrote the book, she was found lying dead in a snowbank where she had fallen in a drunken stupor and died from exposure. After she died, he began to pore over her diaries and talk to as many friends as he could find and trying to figure out what she was thinking. And he says, what I discovered was that I wasn't the father that I thought I had been to my daughter. And he says, while I had been was out spending, fighting, you know, these 18-hour political days for political causes, he goes, my daughter Terry was at home writing in her diary, look at this, he put this in his book, that I missed my daddy, but he probably didn't miss me because he probably didn't care about me. That's what she was feeling. McGovern, as a result of this diary and what the friends had to say to him, wrote this advice for parents. Man, I really applaud him for this, you know, that he put himself on the chopping block to teach us. He said, show more love to your kids by spending more time with them, especially during the adolescent years, no matter what it costs your career. That way, neither of you will have regrets. He writes, I'd give everything I have, and I mean everything, for one more afternoon with Terry, just to tell her how much I love her, and have one more of those happy times that we used to have all too infrequently. See, the question is this, is not if we're ever going to regret living this frantic, overloaded, stress to the limit lifestyle that we all live in some way. The question is, when are we going to regret it? The time, Jesus says, to love is now, and it's going to take some work. You know, I love that expression. You know, God still has plans for your life, and the rest of your life begins now. They start today. It's all about what you decide. I want you to look back over those notes, because you're going to leave here today, and I know you're going to think, hey, this sounds really good. I buy into all that, and I'm going to put this to work, but I got a busy week this week, and I'll get to it. Listen to this. It's a true story. Dr. Frederick Loomis, he wrote this. He's a medical doctor. It's a little dated, but it has 100% application to us today. He says, in 1938, I received a letter that completely changed my life. It came from Peking, China. It said, "Dear doctor, you will not remember me. 2 years ago, I was in your hospital. I lost my baby the day it was born. Then you came in." By the way, they were in the States. "You put your hand on my arm and sat down for a moment beside my bed. You didn't say much, but your eyes and your voice were kind, and pretty soon I felt better. As I sat there, I noticed, however, that you looked very tired and the lines in your face were very deep. Now, I never saw you again, but the nurses told me you were in the hospital practically night and day. Well, it's now 2 years later, and this afternoon I am in China on a vacation. I am the guest in a beautiful home here in Peking. The garden has a wall that's enclosed on one side and surrounded by vines. In the middle of that is a large brass plate, and I asked someone to translate the Chinese characters for me, and they said, it says, 'Enjoy yourself, it's later than you think.' Now, I began to think about it for myself. I had not wanted another baby because I was still grieving for the one I had lost, but I decided at that moment that I should not wait any longer. Perhaps it may be later than I think, too. And then, because I was thinking of my baby, I thought of you, dear doctor, and the tired lines on your face. Perhaps now I can do something for you as well. Perhaps for you, it's later than you think. Please forgive my presumption. But when your work is over, on the day you receive this letter, please sit down very quietly by yourself and think about it. Sincerely, Marguerite." Dr. Loomis went on to write, "Usually I sleep very well, but that night I woke a dozen times, thinking of that brass plate on that wall in China. I found myself saying, well, maybe it is later than I think. So I went to my office the next morning and told them I was going away for 3 months. I then asked Shorty, my best friend, to go home and pack a suitcase and go to South America with me. And I read him the letter. As I did, he shook his head. 'I can't go,' Shorty said. 'I'd like to, of course. But for weeks now, I've been waiting to close the deal. Sorry, old man. Maybe some other time.' But the word 'sometime' came out very slowly. Shorty asked, 'What was that thing the woman said?' 'It's later than you think.' Shorty sat quietly for a moment. Then he spoke. 'You know, I've been waiting 3 months for these people to make up their minds. I'm not waiting any longer. When do you want to go?' Away they went to South America. They were lucky enough to be entertained by one of the richest men in the country they stayed in. He had enormous steel plants. And while they were there, Shorty asked the host if he played golf, and the man said, 'Well, I'd like to. But hey, my wife right now, as I speak, is on vacation in the United States, and I'd love to be with her as well. But I can do none of these things because I'm too busy. You see, I'm 55, and my plan in 5 years is to stop.' 'Yes, it's true. I said that 5 years ago when I was 50. But I didn't know how much we'd be growing. We're building a new plant.' Dr. Loomis looked at him and said, 'Do you know why I'm in South America?' And I told him the story of the letter I received from Marguerite. Like Shorty, he made me replay the words, 'Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.' The rest of the day, he seemed very preoccupied. And the next morning, he said, 'Doctor, I have not slept well. I thought long and hard since we spoke yesterday. I have cabled my wife, and I have told her I am coming to join her in America.' He put his hand on my shoulder. It was a very long winter indeed that wrote those words on that garden wall in China. But there's more. Shorty, though strong and well a few weeks ago, has gone to his reward. I spent the last hours at his bedside. Over and over he said to me, 'Fred, I am so happy we went to South America together. Thank God. Thank God we did not wait too long. It was later than I thought.'" We need to remember if we're going to apply these three truths, what David prayed. God, remind me how brief my time on earth will be. Teach us to make the most of our time. I got to tell you, or ask you at least, do you sense the desire to be different and change? Because if you don't sense it, there's no reason. But I sense you do sense it. Are you going to change? Yesterday, we had a memorial service here for Vicki Blair. Got her daughter and son-in-law here, Randy and Denise. Pastor Rex said, you know, yesterday's service wasn't a 10. It was a 12. It was really one of those remarkable services, and we've had them over the years. Saints Homegoing. That was just a celebration of someone who finished well. Where it was all about relationships. Quite frankly, I have no clue what Vicki ever did in her life other than love people and sing. Because that's all I remember about her, was the smile and the love for others and God and her voice that God gave her. Shortly after that service, while I was over here working, I received a voicemail on my cell phone. It's later than you think. Joe Cope, who I shook hands with last Sunday morning, who every Sunday when I spoke would walk up to me and greet me with the biggest smile and the warmest handshake and the most encouraging words, died suddenly of a heart attack Friday night. His dear wife, Etta, who many of you may know as the vivacious Etta who has that German accent. Just a great couple. And I thought, it's later than you think. Now, Vicki and Joe were two people that I know finished well. People were important to them. And for any of you out there today that have already made this journey with these three truths and you're living these three truths and the best expression of your life is love and you show it through your time and you're doing it already, God speed to you. But for the rest of us, teach us to make the most of our time. Because you're going to stand before your Maker one day, and you're going to have to explain why things and your agenda was more important than Him and others. He made you. So I ask you again, what do you need to change? What do you need to cut out of your schedule? What financial sacrifice do you need to make for things that really count? Don't get me wrong. I'm not asking people to stop working. Saying, what is running your life? God said, whatever sacrifice you make for my kingdom, you will receive 100-fold in the kingdom of God. In other words, living for God and for others is the stuff of life, God says. He doesn't miss that. And you won't miss it while you're doing it. The best use of life is love. The best expression of love is your time. And the best time to love is now. Let's pray. Lord, I want to pray for my brothers out here first today. I want to say to you guys that, you know, I know that as men, we are hardwired not only to perform and achieve, but there is something in us that says we want to protect, we want to provide for all of those around us. The problem is that that strength that you've given us, Father, has turned into a double weakness because we've left it unguarded and we've raced in the name of protection and provision into a lifestyle that leaves us really no time for people. And I'm thankful for the work ethic in our men. I'm thankful that I don't think there's a man here I know that wouldn't lay his life down for his wife and children, and for that matter, for any other woman or any other child. That's in us. It's who we are as men. Do you know what? We get on that steed and we gallop. And we fight that fight. And we're valiant. And sometimes in fighting that fight, we love the most behind. And to you guys that aren't doing that, you know, that you're loving not only your families well, but you're making yourself available for others, that you're a true servant. God bless you. Thank you for who you are. For my sisters out there, you know, I said this a few weeks ago. I think in our culture today, no one has it tougher than women. Because God made you with these tremendous hearts of compassion. And He made you with these hands and these minds that desire to serve and care and nurture. And if that wasn't enough, you've also had to take on the role that men take on. You've taken on the role of being providers. You've taken on the role of being protectors. And so you get slammed in both arenas. And you know, my prayer for you is that to the extent that you can find your way out of that madness, find a place to really bask in who God made you to be, and know that that's the greatest thing to be, is a woman. You have no idea how desperately we men need you. Father, I pray that we would leave here this morning, first and foremost, knowing that your love is above all, through all, in all. That you have said in your word that I want you to know how deeply, how wide, how far my love is for you. And Lord, this is one of those times where we have to take an inventory. If we can inventory your love, that you laid your life down while we were your enemy, maybe we can be motivated by that love to love others. I want that for my life. Right where you're at right now, you can make that statement to God. I want that for my life too. Be you man or woman. Let's make the most of our time. I pray this in Jesus' name.